on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Haulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples. I'm Jesse, and on today's program, we have a very special treat that is going to continue for the next few weeks on this Friday spot. It's a new program called Mnukmi, which is produced by Caitlin Terrell, who is a student in SFU's School of Contemporary Arts, in the Music and Sound program, who did an internship with CJSF this past spring semester, the result of which is this program, where Caitlin does some interviews with Indigenous youth, largely from the sort of Toronto area where she came from before coming to SFU, and does, well, you know, some talking about various topics, and then does a bit of a collaboration with the interviewee and producing a sort of sound art piece at the end of the program. So I will let Caitlin introduce the program once it gets running, but I just wanted to set the stage and let you know exactly what was happening. So enjoy episode one of Mnukmi, and you will get to hear the rest of it as it unfolds over the next few weeks.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Welcome, welcome to the first episode of Mnukmi. I am your host, Caitlin Terrell. I am a fourth-year music and sound student at SFU and pursuing a minor in gender, women, and sexuality studies. I am of mixed Indigenous ancestry with Ojibwe and Irish ancestry, with my traditional lands being Wequemecong Unceded Territory in Manitoulin Island, Ontario. And I am now studying here in BC at SFU. Welcome again to the first episode, the theme of transition. Just to give you a clear outline of what this show is about to be, it's highlighting Indigenous voices, Indigenous art collaboration, and Indigenous music. And I'm so excited for you guys to see what blossoms from this show. And without further ado, here is Ribbon Skirt by Dead Horse. Or Dead Horse by Ribbon Skirt. Enjoy.
Steps.
Ribbon Skirt by Dead Horse. Dead Horse is a Canadian indie rock duo from Montreal with Tashina Bossois on vocals and guitar and multi-instrumentalist Billy Riley. Tashina is Anishinaabe, like myself, and spoke to Dom Lepore on the Merry-Go-Round magazine about how BIPOC and specifically Indigenous artists need more room in the scene while also acknowledging apprehension towards the umbrella genre of Indigenous music. They're most known for their album Bite Down, which was shortlisted for the 2025 Polaris Music Prize. As a Nishkwe myself, I feel the same push and pull when I write about my own anger towards the colonial project and its interpersonal manifestations in so-called Canada. I started songwriting in my youth around the beginning of high school, and I can recall the cultural connection and reconnection I was going through at the time. I remember my teenage self not thinking my art was Indigenous enough or Native enough, or declaring my mixed ancestry and making music under that Indigenous umbrella would cause me to take away space from someone more deserving, a more deserving Native person, a less white Indigenous person. I recall someone in my life who was going through the same things as me who reminded me that I live as a Native person in Canada every day. Our art is uniquely ours and uniquely Indigenous. I am very grateful to say that this person is with me here today, and I'd like to thank my guest, my creative collaborator, and my best friend, Tegan Smallwood to Manukmi. Hello. Hello, Tegan.
Thanks for having me.
Now, would you like to introduce yourself to our viewers?
I'd love to. My name is Tegan Smallwood. Thank you for that lovely intro. I am an Indigenous artist as well. I am Blackfoot and English. My mother was born in Edmonton, Alberta, and was adopted at 6 days old and raised in Ontario, in Toronto. My father immigrated to Canada when he was around 17, also to Toronto. And now my family and I have lived here for the past 20 odd years. My spirit name is Winter Moon. I'm a two-spirit queer person. I use they, them pronouns. And in terms of my artistic practice, I'm a author and poet and playwright.
Well, I'm very lucky to know you through many stages of our lives. I met you in grade 10 drama class, I remember. And I remember finding out that we were both Native and literally screaming out loud out of excitement because I found another one. I knew you through a lot of our youth and many things that that may bring. What stage in life would you say that you are right now?
Right now, I feel like I'm in a very transitional stage of my life. I think a lot of young adults just feel like that no matter what. But I do think in our current kind of political and environmental climate, it feels very exacerbated. But definitely, I think I'm just kind of in this process of slowing down. Last summer, I published 2 books for Killarney Provincial Park. And that was like a year-long project where I moved to the provincial park and lived there and did a lot of field work. And it was a super beautiful project, but I definitely kind of left the summer feeling pretty, just like creatively tired. It was just a big project. Kind of made a very purposeful decision to allow myself like time to just pause and reflect on what my life has been like thus far, what I want to do moving forward. And I'm really like recognizing I'm really privileged for that ability to pause. I think we purposely live in a very like fast-paced society in our like just capitalist society. So I think the decision to purposely pause was one that like people don't usually get, and also one that a lot of people don't understand. But I knew that I kind of just needed to do this. So I have just been keeping it pretty chill the last like 6 months or so. Just kind of enjoying like finding like more out about myself in adulthood and within my own like creative practice. A lot of my creative practice developed in our arts high school. So kind of finding like what it means to be an artist outside of school. I would definitely just say I've been having a slow time and a reflective time.
And we'll get back to that kind of diversion from the norm that you kind of done. Our topic this week is transition. Transitions through life, transitions through time, through place. And I wanted to highlight this sort of, in many ways, this kind of metamorphosis that I saw you go through during like the big bulk of our upbringing together. The experience of gender someone goes through in their youth is a very, you know, it's a very exploratory time, especially in the environment that we were at, the very inclusive school that we went to. How would you articulate the ways in which your experience with gender growing up and coming to the person that you are, how did that journey kind of diverge from like your non-native peers?
I think it wasn't until more so my later teenage years that I started kind of researching and understanding the two-spirit identity and finding a place within that identity. I think though we went to very inclusive downtown Toronto school, it was still a predominantly white school with predominantly white educators. So though I feel very thankful in comparison to other queer people that I receive, you know, adequate education on queer identity and like sexuality, gender, I don't really think I was like ever taught what two-spirit was. And if I was, it was like just not taught properly. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions on like what two-spirit identity means. And I think part of that is because it is very much an identity that can mean so like such vast things to different people, which is beautiful. But then I think it leaves room for just misunderstandings in some regards. Yeah, I didn't really understand that identity until more so like 18, 19, when I kind of involved myself more in that community in Toronto and was, you know, very much welcomed. And I started learning from two-spirit people and elders about what that means, what identity means, where it came from, and kind of just different understandings of it. And I was like, okay, like that, yeah, like that kind of makes sense, like that's I like that, because I think, you know, gender as we know it in a western way, it's very rigid binary in some degree. And I think understanding how two-spirit identity is so fluid really spoke to me. I think having the mix of like Indigenous and queer identity, just, I guess it just immediately is different than like a non-Indigenous person's experience with that, with gender, just because of how gender shaped like our communities for so long in different ways. As I was learning more about culture and kind of understanding, and this was interesting too, I think like learning more about culture, but obviously we're learning about culture that has been unfortunately tampered with by the colonization of Indigenous people. So we're kind of experiencing this culture that has been morphed in its own way from that influence. So I think I was kind of noticing, like, as I was spending more time within Indigenous culture, that there were things where I was like, that doesn't really make sense. Like, why all of a sudden are we so, like, why is it so gendered here when these concepts weren't as rigid? Like there were still colonial beliefs within, like, our communities and our ceremonies and stuff. That kind of made sense to me in terms of, like, the two-spirit identity. Like, I was kind of taught that the two-spirit identity does really relate to, like, our ceremonies and how they operate. And, you know, having, like, the ability, the two-spirit person having the ability to do, like, fire keeping, which is a traditionally masculine thing, and then also doing, like, water carrying and, like, water ceremonies, which is traditionally feminine. I think just, like, that ability to do, I think, yeah, like, my gender identity definitely was then very shaped by the culture and by the ceremonies, whereas I think that piece is just not there for non-Indigenous folks, obviously.
I wanted the first track to show on this episode to be Dead Horse by Ribbon Skirt, because I was a little peeved that I didn't think of naming a band Ribbon Skirt first, but because Ribbon Skirts were kind of sort of like monuments in our friendship. For those of you that don't know, in high school, I starred in a play that Tegan wrote about, like, an Indigenous woman going through the spirit world and, like, about girlhood and all that. And ribbon skirts were a very big element of them. And I was very honored to wear, I think it was your mother's ribbon skirt for that performance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then back when we were both working at Two Spirits of First Nations Toronto, when we were very so lovingly asked by the band Boy Genius to do the land acknowledgement at their Toronto show back in 2023, we had ribbon skirts made for us for that event, and that was so beautiful. Ribbon skirts are something that you actually taught me that gagged me so bad when we were growing up, was finding out that ribbon skirts were a contemporary form of Indigenous regalia. How do you, within our culture, this evolution between material culture, like regalia, like how music in our culture has evolved in contemporary times, what do you think that says about where we're at generally as Indigenous people on Turtle Island?
Well, I think it's beautiful. I think it's really beautiful that our culture has even had the space and time to evolve, because obviously the original colonial idea and hope was to eradicate Indigenous peoples. So I think just the fact that our culture has evolved is so beautiful already, because that's just already such a beautiful milestone. And with that, I think it's a little polarizing with an Indigenous community. Like, you know, how far do we stray away from culture and tradition before it is, like, not, you know, quote unquote,
like,
Indigenous
almost a
anymore?
Rejection in a way.
Yeah, almost. Like, how far can we kind of take it? Mm-hmm. And I think ribbon skirts are kind of an interesting topic where, like, they are, you know, in the grand scheme of, like, Indigenous peoples, they are contemporary. And by that, like, you know, even the ribbons themselves, like, traditionally we didn't have ribbons like that. Only came about when we started trading with European people, right? So I think, but it's interesting because I do think there's some folks that really want to cling to tradition and keep that alive, because I think there's a lot of, like, spirit and, you know, beauty in the, like, true traditions of our people. And I do agree to some extent of, like, you know, kind of like, how much water can you add to juice before it's just, like, water? Like, I don't know, like, you know what I mean? Like, how much can you dilute something until it's not that thing anymore, I guess. But I don't think it's diluting it. I do think it is kind of, like, adhering to the times. And I think, I think it, like, just again, that point of, like, just the fact that culture is changing just means, like, it's just people, there's still Indigenous people to celebrate that culture. And I think it's great, like, I don't know, I just think, like, even, you know, I see, like, these really awesome, like, beaded earrings that are, like, you know, super modernized, like, whatever, with, like, different, like, I don't know, like anime characters or just like different random things that are like way more modern, obviously, right?
I love the ones that are MP3 players. Have you seen
Literally,
those
right?
ones? Oh my God.
So just these super modern, you know, piece of technology or pieces of general like pop culture being indigenized. I think that's so cool. Bringing it back to kind of queer identity as well. Like I've been seeing, I don't know, in the last like how I don't know 5 6 years or something. I mean, they probably existed before that, but they were kind of brought to my attention, like ribbon pants or ribbon shorts instead of skirts, right? And I think that's an interesting, again, and that even this, we're taking this modern thing and we're kind of modernizing it to another degree. And that, again, kind of polarizing. Like I see people who are not about it, but then I see people who are like, no, this is great because there's some folks who want to wear some sort of regalia or some sort of piece, but kind of quote unquote more traditionally, it's usually ribbon shirts for men and ribbon skirts for women. But this kind of newer idea of like ribbon shorts or pants, some people really dislike that, but I think it's almost kind of like one of those things where it's like ribbon skirts themselves aren't even quote unquote this long-rooted tradition, so I think it's nice to see them like evolve as well.
And like I've seen like ribbon shorts and pants being very well utilized within the two-spirit community. And I feel
No,
like that
totally.
just is a perfect example of like these doors being opened even more with contemporary regalia. And it's very exciting. With that, we're going to do a music break. This one is Riding Out the Storm by Samantha Crane.
Children in a wilderness, but in real life I'm all deep in. Xbox is spot with an XXX and a dot dot dot. You know I never thought I'd go and get the chills. That memory that's useful as a payphone, that a street as a metronome, but I guess it let me hear. And here's a good place to be as anywhere.
Curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, feminism, and activism? Tune in to Rabble Radio on CJSF 90.1 FM to hear the latest news and stories that matter to you. Rabble Radio is the flagship podcast of Rabble.ca.
Talk to me about your work that you had done at Two Spirits of the First Nations Toronto.
Yeah, that was a great experience. I think an elder that I was had been working with in my youth actually sent me like their job posting and was like, you could do it for this. It was actually like a couple months right after I had dropped out of university. So I was kind of again in this kind of, what am I doing? You know, what's happening kind of situation. So the position was an Oshkabeois position, which just means helper in Anishinaabemowin. So I was basically like an assistant to the program coordinator at the time. From that role, I kind of evolved to different roles, but I kind of stayed with the agency for just about 2 years. It was a super great experience. Again, I was like 19 when I started there and worked there till I was about like 21. And I was definitely like the youngest one there by quite a bit. I think that really just shows like what their kind of ethics are. And I think it was a really great opportunity that despite my age and, you know, I didn't have as much experience as maybe other people there, but I think I brought a different younger perspective, and I think they really valued that, and I really appreciated that. I think that's very in alignment with, you know, true Indigenous customs of having of you know, inviting and listening to like all voices at the table for what they're all worth, and that, you know, there's no one kind of that hierarchy isn't as potent. I worked a lot in like programming, so doing programming for the like Two Spirit Indigenous community of Toronto, and then I worked in some harm reduction as well. So again, like going out just kind of on the street and connecting with Indigenous and Two Spirit homeless folks in like kind of the downtown core. And yeah, again, I think I was so blessed to be working somewhere where I'm also like actively learning more about myself and my culture, my mm-hmm. gender, sexuality. Like it was a very like just open workspace in terms of those things. And it just was again like very supportive because I think everyone there kind of just had their own like story, you know, and like really didn't shy away from maybe more like taboo subject matter, if that makes sense, where it was just very like you could just kind of really speak your mind and like, you know, get the help you deserved. And yeah, I felt really honored and proud to work there and know that I was kind of